It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. I'm excited to have you here. I'm always excited because of you guys. You get me jacked up, and I want to, be able to deliver really good value. I hope that's why you guys keep coming back, because you appreciate the value that the guests and I are able to deliver to you. I wanted to talk about this because a lot of people get confused about how business works. And so I want to address this today because I think you'll find this fascinating if you can handle the truth. Are you a truth handler? And if you are a truth handler and you can handle this truth, then you will make millions of dollars in your business. 98% of the people that come in contact with you and your business will not do business with you. The good news is 2% of them will, right? 2% of the people are probably going to buy from you right away. 98% will not. What do you do with the 98%? Well, you have to nurture those individuals. I mean, think about it. Look, it's just human nature, right? And I think that a lot of people try to fight human nature. And I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it effectively. So here's the deal. When you're dealing with your customers, whether it's telemarketing, whether it's pay-per-click, whether it's direct mail, whether it's email marketing, just keep in mind that 98% of them will not do anything with the information you give them. They're not going to buy from you. And I would even say, as far as saying that there's 15% that will probably never, ever buy from you for whatever reason. So, you know, you're left there with a huge chunk. And that's where the money is. Nurturing that mass of people that have not bought from you yet. And so my question to you is, what do you have in place to nurture your list? I mean, are you just constantly hitting them with buy this, buy this, buy this? Well, some of them are going to go deaf, blind, and or unsubscribe. But what if they don't buy from you today, and maybe in a week you send them a video just giving them some good value? You invite them to a webinar about giving them some good value. These people are going to draw closer to you. They're starting to build a relationship of trust with you, and then eventually they will buy from you. I want to say that I've had people who have bought from me, who've been on my list for years. So what do you have in place? What kind of automation, what kind of systems do you have in place to nurture that list so you are influencing the non-buyers? Because the non-buyers are the big bulk of your business, of your leads, right? So I want to talk to you about, or at least suggest to you, that you need to put some systems in place and really start thinking about automating everything you can. So if you send them a video and you were able to figure out who watched the video, and based on how much of that video they watched, you would send them a different type of autoresponder, right? So if they watched the entire video, that's somebody who's interested in what you got to say. And so maybe they may get a different, you know, maybe they get an invitation to a webinar because they saw the entire video. Maybe somebody who started the video but didn't watch the whole thing would get a different automated email saying, hey, I noticed that you started the video but you didn't watch it. You know, just want to remind you, this is a great video and it covers the three things that you must do to lose weight, gain weight, look better, smell better, make more money, save more money, you know, attract more men, more women, more, you know, whatever. Teach your dog new tricks. So if you started thinking, how can I leverage each lead that I get, right? How can I really monetize my list? No, take away monetize. How can I nurture this list? What are the ways I can nurture this list? And I want to nurture this list with as little human interaction as possible. The reality is, you and I probably don't want to talk to everybody on our list. We only want to talk to the people who are ready to buy right now. We want to talk to those 2%ers. So how do you get the 98% to the 2%? Over time, nurturing that list, providing value after value after value. And just sit there and realize human nature is going to prevent most of these people from doing business with you today. They're going to be skeptical. So do you have a system to overcome skepticism? They're going to be fearful. Do you have a system that addresses fear? So if you can automate all these little issues that people have, if you can address them with an automated system, it frees up your time. You're doing less work and you're making more money. Then I want to urge you to start thinking digitally, creating online courses, automated webinars. I make money off of a course that I did years ago. It's a constant money maker for me. And it's all automated. It works for me whether I'm here or not, whether I'm traveling, whether I'm sleeping. And I got courses that are constantly making money for me. But my first course, I want to say it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. One that I got Dr. Joe Vitale to help me with. He popped my cherry on getting an online course. So these courses make you money. And this is perfect if you're a consultant, a coach, a trainer, a speaker, an author, something like this that can leverage your time. And you can leverage this asset so many different ways. Here's another way to think about your business. If you are in business, but you can't take a week or 3 or a month to travel or get sick, then I'm going to suggest that your business needs to be fixed. It is broken. If you don't know where your money's coming in on a regular basis, your business needs to be fixed. If you're dealing with the emotional roller coasters that most entrepreneurs deal with, most solo entrepreneurs, most solo practitioners deal with, then again, you need to get serious and fix your business. You need to create a system that fixes those issues that you're having. Something that will create leads for you on an automated basis. Something that closes leads for you on an automated basis. So when somebody gets on the phone with you, they know who you are, they know what you're about, they know your prices, and they're ready to give you a credit card. But they don't want to do it online because they feel it might be too insecure. When I get on the phone with people, I have a 100% closing ratio. I simply don't only talk to the people who are ready to buy. Now, getting them to that point takes time. And I have employees that handle a lot of that for me. I focus on nothing but leveraging the assets that I have. What can I do this with? Here's the course. How many ways can I make money off this course? Can I convert it to a mini course? Can I get affiliates to help sell that course? Either way, I'm making money off these assets. So look at your business. Look at your business as an asset, and how can you leverage it? And the other way I want you to think about is doing the least amount of work and getting paid the most. And I want to clarify this. I'm not talking about you not working. I'm not talking about some pie in the sky, crazy idea that you're not going to work and you're going to make money. We're beyond that. Let's be honest. We don't play that anymore. What I'm talking about is you create a book, an online course, a DVD, some asset that you can sell over and over and over again, right? So a course that you created today now will make you money the rest of your life. That is what I'm talking about. So again, just to recap my little rant here, 98% of people will not do business with you. You have to nurture them over time. They have to get to know, like, and trust you over time. And then you want to start creating assets that you can leverage. Online courses are the biggest money makers. Webinars, workbooks, books, DVDs, audios, all of these things are great assets that you can leverage. You do them once and they're good to go for years, if not the rest of your life. That is how you start to leverage the heck out of your brand. That allows you to go on a vacation as much as you want. There is no bigger thrill in business than waking up and seeing all the money that was made while you're sleeping. To this day, I don't care whether it's a $5 sale. I don't think I have any more of those, but I don't care if it's a $20 sale or a $2,000 sale. When that happens without me having to be there, that is sexy. That is exciting. That is what business is all about. And it's super exciting when these sales not only come from the U.S., but when they come from the Netherlands, when they come from Australia, when they come from New Zealand. Anyway, I just want to give you that food for thought, that you can leverage your time through these online digital assets and create a business that will pay you while you sleep, while you travel, and really take away all your stress and what you're worried about. All right, I'm going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to hang out with Mike Burley right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Mike Burley. Mike Burley is hands-on advisor who takes great pleasure in running the business, delegating responsibilities to staff, and providing expert guidance to retirees and individuals who are fast approaching retirement. He is committed to providing clients with conservative investment strategies that will help fund a better standard of living during retirement. Mike Burley, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thank you, Burke.
You know, it's an interesting thing, and I don't know what the answer is, Mike, but I remember when I was young and dumb, you know, in my 20s and even in my 30s, you know, thinking about retirement seemed like such a long time, you know, and you believe, you have this false sense of, what do you call it, of time, as though you have so much time to get ready for retirement. And all of a sudden, one day you wake up and you're 45 or 50 and you go, oh, crap, I'm not ready.
That's right. It's interesting you should say that, Bert, because most people don't really start putting away money for retirement until they hit their mid-40s, some even, you know, early 50s.
Right.
And the longer you wait, of course, the more you're going to have to sock away, and it can be a little stressful.
Yeah, I think it can be extremely stressful, right? And you know, and look, here's something else, because we also have this false sense of security that, okay, my money is in a retirement account. I got, you know, whatever it is. I got all this money socked away for, you know, for my retirement. I'm good. I'm one of the guys who, you know, I'm one of the guys or the girls who did it correctly. I've been saving since I was in my 30s. I got all this money socked away. But all of a sudden you have this massive market correction like we did a few years ago. And a lot of people got hurt, had to start over, had to go back to work.
Yeah, if you were trying to retire back in 06, 07, and you had your money in mainly in equities, in a 401k, for example, between 07 and 09, the market lost about 55% of its value. That did not come back till about mid-13. So, yeah, a lot of people did have to postpone their retirement.
Now, let me ask you this. As an advisor, somebody who's been doing this for a while, is there a way to avoid those corrections, or is that just, you know, part of the the risk that we all have to deal with when you're retiring?
Well, it is part of the risk, and you know, my feeling is the purpose of the money really should determine where you put it, and your time frame until you're retiring. You know, if you're inside, say, 10 years of retirement, you have to start looking very carefully at how much risk you can take. In other words, how much money are you willing to lose, and how long would you take to get it back? So a lot of people who are in or near retirement start to throttle back at that point and make a determination on a percentage basis of how much money do I really want in risk, in other words, for growth, and how much money would I be willing to take maybe a little less of a return on, but know my principal would be intact. And, you know, it's a little different balance for everybody, but from what we see in a retail practice, it generally is about 50-50. When you get in your mid-50s, 60 years old, most retail investors want more than half their money in risk. And I define risk as where you could have anywhere from a 25 to 50% correction in the market because they don't have the time to make it back.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing that that things like that can occur. But I think that we need to be prepared for that. There's no such thing as a guarantee or a secure situation because you can only, as you suggested, allocate your assets and hopefully. What was your phrase that you said? The money depends on.
Well, the purpose of the money depends how you invest it. So,
right.
You know, if you've got 20 years to retirement, you know, you're going to invest for growth, you know,
right.
and you'll get growth over a 20-year period. But if you've got 5, 6, 7 years to retirement, you have to start looking at maybe I should be investing for income. In other words, invest in strategies that generate interest or dividends and kind of grow your money organically, where you don't have to depend on a capital appreciation in a common stock or a mutual fund, for example, to go up in value. That's kind of a strategy of hope. You know, cross your fingers and toes and hope things work out. Well, in my mind, hope isn't really a strategy. You have to dig, you know, drill down a little deeper and say, well, what if I was to invest in things that maybe had interest payments or dividend payments without the volatility and I could grow my money that way? And then when I'm retired, I'll be able to take those interest or dividend payments and use those to supplement my retirement income. So the strategy changes as you get older.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. And let's talk about this. I want to talk about cash because I remember my first financial advisors, he told me that I should have at least $5,000 cash in my home and but I want to get your thoughts on this. How much cash should we have? I mean, we all love cash. Cash is king. Cash makes us feel good. But how much is too much to keep?
Well, you know, everyone's situation is a little different. But you have to remember, cash is just something you set aside for what we would call an emergency fund or a rainy day fund. You know, the rest of your money should be working for you. You know, cash is like down here on the East Coast in Florida in the tropics where we are. It's like your money's at the beach drinking pina coladas, right? It's on vacation. It's not going to earn anything for you. So most of your money should be working, but I do believe you should set a little bit aside for an emergency. But, you know, you don't confuse an emergency with something that's an inconvenience. In other words, you know, if the washer broke down, you know, that's not really a true emergency. That's an inconvenience.
Right.
Rule of thumb, you know, you hear this thrown out a lot, 6 months of expenses. Well, that kind of just depends on your life stage, too. I mean, if you're working and you got a family and a mortgage and you're paying your bills, yeah, maybe that might make sense if, you know, a situation come up where you lost your job or something. But, you know, the flip side of that coin is if you're retired, you're on a fixed income, you have a pension, Social Security, and income for your investments, you probably would need to have 6 months set aside. So, you know, everyone's situation is going to end up a little different. But, you know, I would say somewhere in that range for most people, I would say 5% of their, you know, of their investment portfolio in cash, maybe, at any given time. I can't see putting, you know, if you had $100,000 in your IRA, maybe you want to have $5,000 in cash set aside, because you wouldn't want to have to tap into your IRA for an emergency and pay tax on the withdrawal. Something along those lines would be, to me, reasonable. You know, because cash goes backwards over time. You know, the reality is, from a financial point of view, your cash is never going to be worth more than it is today. So strictly from an economic point of view, you'd be better off to spend it today, right? Now, I'm not recommending you do that, but it's never going to be worth more than it is today due to inflation. So if you think back, you know, 40 years ago, if you had $1 million in cash and you didn't invest in any type of investments, you know, the purchasing power of that today would be about $250,000. You know, your $1 million really would only buy about $250,000 of goods and services today based on inflation of, you know, 3.5-4%, somewhere in that range. So you have to have your money working for you and at least be able to pace inflation. You know, we don't have to hit it out of the park every year, but you have to pace inflation. So if you can, you know, generate returns anywhere in the 3-7% range, I think you'd be just fine.
Yeah, and I think I want to emphasize this, because you've said this a couple of times, and I want to have everybody clear on this. These are generalizations. It's going to be different for everybody because everybody's different. There's no one-size-fits-all, and I think that one of the mistakes that I made early on, thinking that one size did fit all, and the reality is, you know, my needs are different than somebody else's need. I have five kids and a wife, where my brother has one kid and no wife. So everybody's different, and there is no one size fits all. And this is why it's important to sit down with somebody and get a second opinion as to what you think you need and what your strategy should be.
Exactly, because what can happen is we've had people come in for reviews, potential clients, and we go through a strategy with them and say, well, how much do you think you're going to need in cash? Well, I don't know. Not that much. And then, you know, after drilling down a little deeper, we come to find out, well, you know, we are thinking about getting a car in the next 12 to 14 months. You know, and we're going to want to put X amount down. Well, then you have to set that money aside. That's not an investable asset, because I don't want to have to invest that money 12 months down the road, have to go sell that. It may be worth a little more, maybe worth a little less. So that's money you would park aside for that car purchase. And like you say, five kids are going to be a heck of a lot more expensive than one. Things are going to come up, right? As you well know, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, and I like what you said early on about, Is it an emergency or is it an inconvenience? And the reality is most of the things that people get upset about and deemed tragic are really, for the most part, an inconvenience. My son just had he had an inconvenience. His car got totaled out. I mean, he had that car for 10 years, and the electrical system had shorted out. And unfortunately, that meant that his oil sensor light didn't come on, and he drove that car until it seized up.
Right.
And it's an inconvenience. It's not life, death. You know, luckily, he did have a bunch of money in the bank, and he was able to go out and get another car.
Right.
That's an inconvenience. Go ahead.
Some people keep too much cash on hand. And the situation is that is if you really think about your worst day financially, how bad could your worst day financially be? Because let's say you come home and you know you're pulling your garage and you accidentally hit the gas instead of the brake and you hit the hot water heater and you create a fire in the garage and you get injured and you know your car's partially totaled and but you start adding all this up. You say, well, you know, I have auto insurance and my deductible is $250 or $500 and I have homeowner's insurance that's going to cover the little fire in the garage. That's $1,000 deductible and you know, I have medical insurance with a whatever, $250, $500 deductible for my medical expense. You know, and that would be a pretty bad day, right? Medical expense,
yeah.
Your car's wrecked and part of your home's on fire. You know, that's a bad day, but out of pocket, maybe $1,500, $2,000.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
Most people insure these items. So your worst day financially is not as bad as you might think it might be.
Well, and to take that, and to put that in perspective, because I think a lot of what we do needs to be put in perspective, and that is your worst day financially is better than, let's say, your worst day with a real health crisis.
Right.
You know, having your child being rushed to a hospital or being diagnosed with a chronic illness or something worse, that's a really bad day. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you have a bunch of money, then having a health crisis makes it a little bit more manageable. But there are a lot of people who have a lot of money and their disease is not curable. So, you know, they're still having a bad day every day.
Right. Look, the most valuable asset we have is our health. You know, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have your health, what's it worth?
Absolutely. And matter of fact, since you brought it up like that, we see a lot of people who trade their health for wealth today, and then later on, they're trading their wealth to try to recapture their health. And it's a no-win scenario. I mean, and you have to, not to sound like a commercial here, but you have to have balance. You really cannot work 12, 15-hour days and think it's not going to impact your relationships and your health, no matter how much you get paid.
Right. And I think the key word that you use there is balance. You know, you have to find that balance in your life where you can put the time into your work. But, you know, hey, family's important to me and most people. You want to be able to spend time with your family. You know, you want to make good choices. So it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mike, listen, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about money and retirement. Mike Burley, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Hey, thanks. Enjoyed it. Take care.
All righty. You bet.
All right.
Good stuff there from Mike Burley. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. My next guest, J.V. Crum III. J.V. Crum helps establish business owners and coaches build companies that make a big impact and big profit. He's the founder and CEO of ConsciousMillionaire.com that provides training, coaching, and mastermind through its first Million Academy. J.V. is a speaker, coach, Huffington Post columnist, number one best-selling author of Conscious Millionaire, Grow Your Business by Making a Difference. He hosts the top-ranked Conscious Millionaire show and podcast and holds an MBA, JD, and Master's in Psychology. JV was built and sold successful companies and is featured in the upcoming movie Rise Up. JV Crum, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, Bert, thank you for having me because I think Money for Lunch is a great idea. I mean, why would you want to take a lunch break where you spend money? Why not make some money?
Well, you know what? And the premise behind Money for Lunch is, you know, if a bunch of guys come together, and I'm using that generically, when a bunch of entrepreneurs come together like you and me and a couple other people, if we go out to lunch, sooner or later, the subject is money. You know, maybe it's under the disguise of look at this new business venture. Maybe it's an investment. Maybe it's a new product. Maybe it's something that you're working on. But sooner or later, it comes down to money. And it's not because we're greedy, but it's because it's fun.
Well, and let's face it, if you want to make a big impact in the world, I think one of the biggest misnomers in, and I've run into a lot of entrepreneurs who have this money belief, there's something wrong with making money. It's kind of deeply embedded in them. Now, I like to reframe that to what I think is the real truth. If you want to make a big impact, you want to positively impact a lot of clients, make a difference in their lives, uplift them, you know, provide a solution to their problems, you've got to grow a company that's building, that has the money, the cash flows, in order for you to get out there and touch more people's lives and make your difference. So to me, making a big impact is basically, it's the route to getting to big profits, but without big profits, they're inextricably intertwined. You can't make a big impact. The two have to be co-occurring.
Yes. And, you know, something that boggles my mind, and JV, I'd love to get your opinion on this. I just don't understand why somebody's in business who has such mixed emotions about making money or making profit or whatever. It's just like, why are you in business if you don't, you know, if for whatever reason you don't like being rich or wealthy or whatever description you want to use? It just boggles my mind.
Well, you know, 90% of people who go into business fail. They never even get to $100,000 a year in annual revenues, and within 4 to 5 years they're out of business. It's the same group. The truth is, all of us have internal ceilings. I've got an internal ceiling. You've got an internal ceiling. People don't think of Warren Buffett. I don't know what his current net worth is. It's $40 billion or more, right? But let's face it, nobody has yet hit the bar of being a trillionaire. And it's not because they couldn't, because this is all about scalability. It's because nobody yet has the mindset to, you know, we think about the Olympics, that, you know, you're going to raise the bar. Nobody's raised the bar that far. So all of us have internal limits. But the problem is, a lot of people, and I work in the conscious domain, where people really are heartfelt. They want to make a difference in people's lives. But all of us grow up, and somewhere we get messages along the way about what we're not capable of doing, about how hard money is, doesn't grow on trees, and all of that. And it goes in our subconscious, and we all have some work to do. And to get to our next level, we all have to do some more work. So that's why my primary focus is helping, once somebody's hit that six-figure, helping them do the things in their business that will absolutely move them forward as quickly as possible to that first million. Because once you get to the first million, that second million's a lot easier.
Right.
That first million changes your life. And if you're an online business, you know, just an easy, you know, it's a conservative, every industry has its own multiple. But if you've got a third of a million in cash flow, which if you're an online business, you probably have that at a million, the day you get to a million in revenue might also be the day that you also are a net worth of $1 million, because your business is worth some multiple of the cash flows you have. Most people don't think of that. And then now you've got a $1 million business you could be selling and now start another business, or you might want to grow it to $2 or $3 million and sell it, but that's a great exit strategy as well. And now you can go out and make an even bigger difference with your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that kind of thinking. Which leads me to this question here. Here you are. You're the best-selling author. You're known for The Conscious Millionaire. So I got to ask you, what the heck is a conscious millionaire?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bert, and I love that question. There are multiple ways I can answer it, but I think the easiest way for people to grasp is it's somebody who wants to make their money in a way that's done with honesty, with integrity, that uplifts their clients, that they've got a higher purpose for their business than I just want to go out and figure out how to make money. Now, I made my first money that way, and I can tell you it's unfulfilling. It's kind of depressing on the days that nothing goes well, but if you're doing something that you really believe in, that you think this is going to really make a difference in someone's life, that's that higher purpose for your business, you're going to drive forward even when you end up, you know, against a wall someplace, because it happens. This journey called being an entrepreneur, I've been at it for 3 decades. It's a roller coaster, and you got to accept that you signed up for a roller coaster ride, and not every time on the roller coaster ride are you going up and hitting new peaks. Sometimes you're dipping down. But if you believe in what you're doing and you're just really excited and passionate about it, that will drive you forward faster than any money that you put in the bank.
Yes. You know, and it's interesting, too, because we see some of these conscious millionaires. I can't remember his last name, but Tom, the guy who's the CEO of Tom Shoes.
Yeah, Tom
Shoes.
In fact, he's in the movie Rise Up with me, along with Tony Robbins and the Dalai Lama, Arianna Huffington. There are a lot of great people in that movie. And I've been at a conference with him. He's just such a great guy.
Right. And I think that he's a great example of a conscious millionaire, in the sense that he immediately was, you know, from day one, was thinking of helping communities, of beyond just money and having a bigger impact in a meaningful way. Not everybody thinks that way, and just because you don't think that way doesn't mean that you're not a conscious millionaire. But I just looked at him as, here's a guy who from the very get-go had that conscious mentality.
Right. And I think what's happened in the last 10 years, because I've watched, you know, the cycles, is somewhere around, you know, you can't point to an exact date, but I've had this conversation with a lot of people in this movement of let's do business more consciously, more transparently, have a bigger reason for our business than just how do we get money out of clients. I think about 7 or 8 years ago, we went through some kind of a tipping point, because I've noticed it with Conscious Millionaire. When I first started Conscious Millionaire, I was writing my book. I actually paid for a really, you know, fairly expensive mastermind. It was $15,000, and everybody there was, you know, big players in information marketing, and I wanted to learn from them. And out of their good heart, they actually, each one of them would take times taking me aside and go, JV, you got to get rid of this conscious part, because all anybody wants is the money. And I'd say, yeah, but you don't understand. The conscious part's kind of like the big deal, that you're doing something that you really believe makes a difference. That was the kind of conversation I had 10 years ago. Today, when I meet people and I go, you know, what I do is I have Conscious Millionaire Institute, and people go, oh my God, that's so cool. So we've really shifted. And I think what it is, when we went through 2008, 2009, one of the good things that came out of that was so many people, millions and millions of people, hung up their hat on the idea that they're going to go get a job that they hate, because they already hated it before, but that they are willing to do that, or they have a business that they hate, because I did that and I found out you could sell it and start something else. They wanted some more fulfillment. They wanted a life that had meaning. And I think that's more important to people in the United States than it has ever been. And a lot of it came out of people realizing they had built kind of a house of cards, when all of a sudden you lose your home and you had $300,000 or $400,000 equity, you know, the year before, and now you can't even make the payment because you don't have any customers, because everything kind of dipped down. And I think people went through kind of a, I haven't used this word in a long time, existential, internal, you know, reevaluation. What's important? What's my priorities? And it turns out people want to be happy. Let's just face it. We want to be happy. We want to enjoy our lives. And we don't want a business that at the end of the day, we go, damn, one more day of business and I hated it just as much as the day before. We want to be happy, and we want to be working with clients that are happy they're working with us. That changes your whole perspective on business.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, in at the top of the show, I was talking about having a broken business. If you can't leave your business and go on the vacation that you want, or have, you know, let's say multiple vacations a year, it may be a sign that your business or your job is broken, right? Your business is broken. And if you hate your job, if you hate your business, if you hate Mondays, or I should say, if you start panicking on Sundays because you hate Mondays so much, that's probably a good sign that your business is broken, that you need to make a change.
Well, and that, Bert, I think it's a great point, because there are 3 stages of getting to your first million. The first one is just getting to the 100,000, but most people who do that, they even do it wrong, because there's systems that they need to be setting up as they get there. There are actually 3 systems: marketing, selling, and distribution. But when you get to that 100,000, then that 100 to 500,000 is all about taking, honing it down, really getting your marketing system working so that you're bringing in the right leads, converting them, and that you've got your whole business, everything you're doing, systemized. And that makes the half million to 1 million. You can do that in 1 year or less, because once you get there, you've got all the systems working, and you can't go on vacation and really shut off your phone if you don't have systems that guarantee that every day everything happens exactly the way it did the day before, and guess what? It worked the day before, and it's going to work today. Systems are what you've really got to install.
Yes, and I love that. I love your thinking there, because really, systems is what, you know, is the what do you call it? It is what makes or breaks a business. You look at, and I know there's. I don't want to get into the the negative stuff of the pyramids, but if you look at the pyramids, they took the stuff that was impossible to do, but because they had the right systems, they created something that has stood the test of time.
Yeah, absolutely, and so that's, you know, if we look at the positive side of multi-level marketing. There's, you know, in my mind, there's a question as to whether that's a real business, because you don't actually own your list unless you can really get that list to move with you. So because a lot of the top multi-level marketers, because I have friends who do that, it's not my personality. So it's not, you know, I've tried it. It's just not me. But the ones that are really great, they've built a list that's under them. And then they tend to, for whatever reasons, move every few years, and that list moves with them. Now you've got a business, but if you don't have something that moves with you, that you've got, you know, people go, well, you know, we do really well on Twitter and Facebook, but it's your list that are really your community, because that's the ones that you can move with you and move forward for whatever you're doing. Twitter can change their rules tomorrow, and you don't have access to any of those people. So a lot of building a business is building a community. And that, to me, is the smart way to build a business today, is that you want a hyper-engaged community that loves what you're doing. They love talking to each other. They're going to spread the word of mouth for you, because they love what you're doing in the way that you contact and talk to them. The old way of just this 1.0, where I'm just going to push out, doesn't tend to work anymore. I mean, if you're going to build your first million, one of the ways you want to leverage yourself is by having a great community.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to just emphasize this again. I want to go back to what you said, the list. I don't care what business you're in. Really, ultimately, that list of customers is probably your biggest asset, whether you're Google or whether you're, you know, Bobby Joe working from home. That list, and you said this, it's transferable, it moves with you, or it can be sold. That is where the money's at.
Well, it is where the money's at. And the thing is, you really have two assets. One is your list, and one is your intellectual property. So that's your copyrights, that's your ebook that you wrote, that's your program that you put together. And, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm not going to give out a lot of legal advice. I'm just saying you might want to consider having your list and your intellectual property held in a separate holding company, so that if your company gets sued, that's really your assets. If your company, for whatever reason, you know, legitimate or not, got shut down for some reason, if you've got your list and you've got your intellectual property, you're good to go.
Well,
you
know what?
Choose another name, and now you're up and running again.
And you mentioned network marketing. I want to point this out. I love the strategy you just pointed out. I hope people catch the essence of the strategy. There was a company, I believe it's called VEMMA, V-E-M-M-A. They've been in good standing, as far as I know. I'm not involved with them, but I know several of my friends are. This is a network marketing or a multi-level marketing company that's been around, I believe, 15 or 20 years. And they recently got into some hot water with the FTC or somebody. My point being is, if they would have separated their list and had it in a different holding company, then they could have probably gone into plan B.
Right.
Now, because everything's in one holding company, they're kind of screwed. They're shut down until they can figure out this legal crap that they're in.
Well, exactly. And that's why a lot of of entrepreneurs don't really believe in investing in setting up their businesses correctly. And folks, this isn't, you know, I don't do legal work for the public. I only, you know, help entrepreneurs grow their business. So I'm not looking for any work out of this. But it's not that expensive to hire an attorney to look at things and set up the documents correctly and set up how everything is structured so that you're protected. You know, you might spend $1,000 on that, but wow, that could save you down the road when you're building a multi-million dollar business, and that's probably your goal. That could literally save you millions of dollars. You just need to set up things correctly.
Absolutely. You know what, and JV, I want to talk about this. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit because you became a millionaire in your 20s, and I want to talk about what is this formula for creating wealth that you've used to create millions, and how can our listeners start using it?
Yeah, I would love to share that. You know, writing a book, if you've never written a book, is a daunting task because, especially when you're writing a book about how to be successful in the way that you've been successful and you want to really translate to people, you've got to sit down and figure out, well, what was I doing? And the thing is, most of us do things that are successful. We develop habits, but we're not sure what we're doing. We're just like, it works and we keep doing it, but we've never analyzed it necessarily. And I had to sit down and analyze, well, how did I create this success so quickly? And what I realized was that every day I was consistently doing three things. I'm going to tell you what they are, and then I'm going to give you just a brief introduction to what they are. I was taking conscious, focused action. So the conscious part is the most important part, and working with a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, coaches, I found it's the one everybody wants to skip because they've heard that you're supposed to take massive action. But if you don't know what direction you're going in, massive action could be the worst thing that you did because you might be going backwards. So that conscious part at the core of it is deciding what is that number one priority result that I want to achieve, and having a time frame for it. Might be 30 days, might be 90 days, might be a year, or you might have a year and you're going to chunk it down to a smaller part of it for 30 days. And why, above all other priorities that I could choose, and that's the big problem that every entrepreneur has, is that we have endless ideas of things that we want to do. That's probably why we're an entrepreneur. We're excited about creating change and building things. The truth is, you can't build 10 things at once, and that's why most people fail. You got to choose, of all the things I could do, let's say in the next 30 days, what's the one that's going to move the needle forward on me building my business and really getting what I want on the long term? And then you have to look at, do I need some more resources? What's the best option for me doing it? Maybe I want to sell one product. Maybe I want to sell two. Maybe I want to have a coaching program, whatever it is. And then the focus. A lot of people just think of focus and visualization, things like that. It's all mental, but it's not. Actually, the HeartMath Institute has found that your heart energy going out, what I call putting your whole heart into it, you know, being totally committed, is 5,000 times stronger energy than what comes out of your mind. And then your body's got to be ready to take action, and that brings you to, in simple terms, only taking those actions that will help you move the needle forward to that result and eliminating everything. I've worked with clients that have gotten rid of 80% of what they were doing. Not that these weren't good things or even business building things at times, but they were not laser focused on one particular outcome. And once you get laser focused on that and you wake up in the morning and all you're doing is asking yourself questions, how do I get there? What are the best actions to take? And that's how you move through your day. It's amazing what you can accomplish in 30 days.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love the idea of this conscious focus effort or action. And sometimes massive action is the right way. Massive action is probably better than no action. But if you can be strategic about it and be focused about it, then, of course, that's going to double or triple your results.
Oh, well, absolutely. It can tenfold them. It can hundredfold them because – now you've got everything you're doing, and if you have other people on your team, everything they're doing is all moving in one direction, and you're just going to create your momentum so much faster.
All right. So let me ask you this real quick, and maybe I missed it. So the first one was taking conscious, focused action, right?
So conscious is the first step. So you have to be aware of what it is you want to achieve and why is it so important, and then what are the resources you're going to need and what's the best path for getting there. All of that's the conscious part. And you might spend, if you're building your business, you might spend 30 days on that part. And you go, oh my gosh, 30 days, I can't spend 30 days on it. Yes, but if 30 days was going to get you to 10 times the results at the end of a whole year, wouldn't it be worth the time to figure out where you want to head and why it's so important and why you're choosing that versus the other options? Because you have to evaluate those. But then when you get into the part where you're taking focused action, which is step two and step three, all going to that number one priority, you just really start cutting through things and moving forward rapidly.
I love it. I love it. All right, listen, we're almost out of time, so we're going to have to bring you back, you know, when your schedule allows, and have some more fun. But I wanted to ask a couple of questions. You know, again, you were fairly successful early on in your career, but I want to ask you this anyway. What was holding you back from becoming an entrepreneur sooner?
Oh, it's a great question, Bert, and almost nobody ever asked that. I grew up in a family out in the country. My dad owned his own business, but there was maybe 200 or 300 people where I grew up, and nobody had any money. So my model, my dad was in citrus and he was in agriculture, had about 180 acres and farmed. And if we had a freeze, we just didn't have any money all year. I mean, literally didn't have money. I mean, literally, like, we didn't know where the food was coming from, right?
Wow.
And that was like 5, 6, 7 years old. So I encode, we all encode in our minds these patterns that we see. And what I encoded was building a business is how you stay broke. That business owners are the people in life. And, of course, we didn't have any internet or anything. We're just out in the country, right? And so I thought that was the way to be poor. And the way I ended up being an entrepreneur is I just finished my master's in clinical psych. I was going to go to law school, and my dad's business was basically bankrupt, which was kind of normal. And I loved my dad, and he says, will you please come go into business with me? And I said, well, you know, after a month, I said, okay, I'll do 6 months. Now, I'd never had a business course, read a business book, read a business article, because I was convinced this is the way to be broke. And I actually wanted, at five, decided I was going to be a millionaire when I grew up, because I was already tired of not getting the candy bar, you know? So I said, I'll help you for 6 months. And it turned out that my mind was a system thinking mind. And what had helped me in college actually helped me in business, that I was just creating all these systems and analyzing. I'm a numbers guy, analyzing all the numbers. And I remember the third month, it was a weekend, and we had a regional trucking line. We're pulling hundreds of loads a week, but we have no money in the bank. In fact, we're constantly owing people money that we can't pay them. And I said, well, this doesn't make much sense. Now, it's really funny, because all the real big answers in business are actually very simple, but usually the business owner can't see them. That's why I have three coaches myself, and that, because they see my problems, and I coach people, and I see their problems. And so I called up my dad on Sunday night, so elated and excited. I had found the problem, and I said, Dad, I now know what's wrong. We pay out more money every week than we take in. Well, you listen to that. It's almost humorous. But you know what I did? Monday, I called our clients, and I raised our rates as much as 25%, because I said, we can't stay in business and keep providing you trucking service at the rates you're paying us. So we either have to go out of business, and you're going to have to find somebody else. And there was a scarcity of trucks, so I knew that the leverage was on my side. Or we need higher rates. And I made those kinds of changes in the business the first year, paid off 9 years of liens and debts, got us to over 6 figures in profits, and within 3 years, we were making as much as 6-figure profits in a month. And all of it was putting systems in. That's really what I did. I looked at everything, and I said, well, what's the best way to do this? And then I had everybody do it the same way.
Man, that's funny. But what's interesting here is,
but that
is,
was my resistance. Why did I guess I could have started a company when I was 18 or something. But I thought a business was how you lose money. But see, we all get these kind of crazy beliefs based on how we see the reality around us, especially when we're growing up.
Absolutely. No, I love that. I love that whole encoding thing. I think that is so phenomenal, because the way we encode things, just like with the example you gave, there's people right now who are struggling financially because something they encoded. They are struggling with their relationships because of something they encoded. They're struggling with their health for the same reason. But what's interesting to me about your story that you related there is that you got this aha moment. Hey, we are taking in a lot less money than we're spending, And that was a big aha moment for you. And but here's the thing that turned it around is that you took action and you said, we got to start charging more money.
Right. Some people, absolutely. And Bert, on the fourth month, I said, well, that works so well. Let's look at what we're spending. And I realized that we were being taken to the cleaners because, you know, my dad was very good-hearted and didn't really take bids or anything. And so I said, wow, we're going to change this. We're going to get our own mechanics, open our own mechanic shop, quit having all these shops that are taking a trailer, keeping it for a week for a two-hour repair, and then charging us literally $1,000 or something. So I went through all of that. And I met with all of our suppliers, and I said, you know, love you guys, and I'm going to take three bids. And they said, well, who are you going to take the other ones from? And that was like a big moment of insight. I went, oh, I'm not going to share that. I was like, I didn't have that plan yet, but when they asked it, I went, ooh, that's probably not a good thing to let them know. And I got these blind bids, and all of a sudden I cut, you know, 20-30% all of our cost of the parts we were using. I have our own two mechanics. We start doing preemptive maintenance every month on every piece of equipment, taking records. And that's part of all those systems that I put into place. But it was, if you think about it, these were very simple things, but it's hard to see them when you're struggling day to day with your business. But it's much easier for someone, because I was kind of coming in as the outside consulting because I didn't know anything about the trucking business, so I didn't care how other people did their trucking business. In fact, I ended up running the business very differently than 95% of the trucking lines, because at the end of the first year, I looked at things like billing and paying and how they all did it, and I said, well, that didn't make any sense to me, so I'm not going to do it. But if you came in and you're inside the system, you never question those kinds of things.
Right. I love it. Okay, so I'd love to bring you back and talk more about being a conscious millionaire. And I want to give away this link here. It's called consciousmillionaire.com/free book. consciousmillionaire.com/free book. Or if you don't want to have a free book, you can go to Amazon and buy it there. But again, consciousmillionaire.com/free book.
Well, and Bert, not only am I going to give them the book, we've had over 50,000 downloads from Amazon. I really want to change people's lives. I have a $97 program. It's $126 value with the book. And it has 16 videos, audios, downloadable PDFs that go along with all of the book chapters. And I want to give that to them free as well. So when they go to consciousmillionaire.com/free book, we're just going to ask them a few questions so we know who they are. And then we're going to get the book, and you're going to get the link to get the training program, and all of that's 100% free as a gift for being on your show.
I love it, man. That's fantastic. I love that. Any parting advice or guidance as we wrap up the show?
You know, this is going to sound a little odd, but it's great advice. In July, I went and did a vision quest. So I spent a weekend camping. I camp this weekend. I'm going camping. I camp a lot. And I built a big fire, and I said, okay, I'm making some important shifts in terms of fine-tuning who I'm working with, what we're going to provide, you know, some new trainings and coaching and masterminds we're coming out with. I'm going to go, and the question I decided to ask myself, now, I'm a guy who's made millions of dollars. You'd think I'm going to ask the question, what makes the most money or something like that. Here was the guiding question for my whole weekend, and I journaled a lot. What will bring me most joy? What will bring me the most joy? And because I sort for others naturally, I knew that whatever brought me most joy would be the greatest value to other people. I didn't have to worry about that. But I was focused on what's going to bring me the joy, because I knew that then I would have a greater motivation, a greater fulfillment. I would be uplifted as I'm uplifting others. And that's how I approached the whole weekend about making major decisions about my business, was what will bring me joy. And if it wouldn't bring me joy, I didn't care how much money it was going to make. I didn't want to do it.
J.B. Crum III, I think that is fantastic advice. Follow the joy, right? And really, because ultimately, you said this at the beginning of the show, is that we all want to be happy. That's really what we're looking for, is how can we reach happiness? And I think sometimes we get sidetracked looking for the money versus the joy. JV, I'd love to bring you back and talk more.
I'd love to come back. This was a lot of fun. And thank you so much for having me on your show, Bert.
You bet. Good stuff there from JV Crum III. You can find out more about him at consciousmillionaire.com/free book. Is that right? Yes, /free book. ConsciousMillionaire.com/free book and find out more about JB. You can download the book, get a bunch of videos, get started, get ramped up, and most of all, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.